Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Seriously Risky Business. I'm Adam Boileau from over on the main show, filling in for Pat while he's busy with some risky business. I'm joined by our colleague, Tommy Wren, to talk us through his work in this week's newsletter. This episode is sponsored by Red Canary and also the Hewlett Foundation Cyber Initiative, who have supported Tom's work since the beginning. Thanks for joining me, Tom.
I was going to say, Pat. G'day, Adam. Welcome to the show.
So this week, you cast a pretty critical eye over Microsoft's response to the, I mean, let's be honest, the relatively epic hack by the Chinese on their infrastructure. We've learned a bit more about how this unfurled lately, and you had a bunch of feelings about that, given some of your background.
Yeah, my background is that I worked at a very high security organization. And by that, I mean that people took security very seriously. And that kind of, I don't know, seeps into your bones, I guess. So when I first heard about this hack, there were a couple of things that really just leapt out at me as things that would just never happen at ASD. And as I've thought more about it, it seems like there's two types of problems in the breach. And one of them were kind of like technical problems, like there was a race condition at some point in the chain of events. And like, you know, that's whatever, that happens. But there were also these big picture governance problems where Microsoft is just making either no decision at all or making, I think, in retrospect, the wrong decision. So the first one that occurred to me is that they combined what they describe as metadata endpoints for their kind of corporate and personal or individual systems. And so these two systems had different security. They were a security boundary. And I can just imagine myself sitting in a meeting in somewhere like ASD, where you're talking about combining two services that have different authentication scopes. And in that very first meeting, someone would say, what are the security implications of that? How are we going to mitigate them? What's the risk? And it just seems that for Microsoft, that conversation never happened. So they combined these two things. They did some work on the documentation, but they never had any mitigations to prevent those two things leaking over. They didn't think about what if people misread the documentation. They didn't take any other steps. And that just was like mind-blowing. Like, how does that happen? And I, for a while, I was thinking to myself, am I crazy? And so I rang a few people that I used to work with, and they were like, I said to them, would that concern be raised in the very first meeting? And they were like, maybe not the very first meeting, but very early on. And to me, that's a failure of governance culture when that just never comes up or everyone assumes that someone else is doing it. That's the only way that you can explain that happening from, you know, a decision at the top level to it being exploited by the Chinese. It's everyone else. Everyone thinking that it's someone else's job to do that, whereas a security culture, I mean, security is really about checking things, right? And so if you've got a security culture, you would check that those things occurred.
You would certainly hope so, yes. And I think like that particular part of the issue where they had written code that was supposed to do some validation, or the documentation suggested it might do validation, and then everyone has, you know, used it assuming that. So that's kind of like one part of like blending the checking and the implementation and documentation in a way that didn't make sense. But to the other bit of your argument, like from a design point of view, this not being a thing that would have happened in a, you know, in a high sec world, Microsoft's consumer services, so Hotmail and Outlook, you know, are just a tenant in their enterprise/consumer architecture. And so from that point of view, you can kind of like by design, they have blended those two sets of requirements. And I assume because like the Hotmail part of it came first and then the Exchange Online and then the gradual move to 365. So like with many corporate environments like this, you can see the lineage of why a thing happened, but those are not security concerns. Like that's a business concern that they started with a consumer product and turned it into an enterprise product.
Yeah, so I can totally understand from the historical perspective like how that evolved to be that way, and also how Microsoft security culture is the way that it is. Like, for most of the time that it's been around, that's kind of fine. Like, it's is it a $3 trillion business? It's a big business, right?
Yes,
it's,
it is.
It hasn't crueled that business. So from a business perspective, it's been fine. What I'm saying is that it's positioning itself where governments rely on it. And I think that that security culture is not fine anymore. So it's not fit for the purpose it's trying to sell its business as. So that's really the point I'm making there. And I guess another example is that the key had an expiry date that was essentially meaningless. So again, you know, the kind of security governance that would occur at a place that actually cared about security would be, let's check that the keys actually expire. Again, the governance is the part that's missing. So, you know, we've notionally got security. We just don't have actual security.
Yeah, and I think they're, you know, back to lineage again, the, you know, the spook and high security world, like, have been doing cryptography and security, you know, since before computers existed, whereas us civilians and private sector companies, like, this is a new concept for us, that security might have an actual impact as opposed to it being a thing that we do performatively or we just kind of cargo cult. And I think, like, if you had to describe how civilians use crypto, cargo culting to me really does seem like the right, you know, the right description, because, you know, we do it, but without really thinking about it or understanding the hows and the whys, and that's how you end up with, you know, expiration that doesn't matter. Do you think that, you know, the time has come for some government rigor to be imposed on them from the outside? Like, and I guess, I mean, Microsoft in particular, but, you know, civilian technology in general, because we're all just kind of making it up instead of doing it properly?
I mean, I've always got mixed feelings about this, because I think the way that you do security well is you understand the risks and then you do something about them, right? And telling someone else telling you to understand the risks, like, I don't know that it actually does that good.
Doesn't
a job.
Go super well generally, yes.
And so I suppose part of my motivation here is to point out to people, including Microsoft, here are the ways that you've gone wrong, and I think this is actually a problem for your business. And so it's a mystery in a way. Well, actually, I don't think it's a mystery. Microsoft has many good security people.
Yes.
And they've got many ex-intelligence people and ex-government people working in that business, right? But they're clearly not involved in these decisions in a way that is actually making any impact on how they're checking that things actually work. And I guess the whole point is that those people need to be brought into that room and to be able to stick up their hand and say, what are the security implications of this? Maybe we should think about it and actually do something about it, rather than just assume that someone else will do it. I suppose the other interesting example from this, I suppose it's a case study now, is the chain that you and Patrick have spoken about, is that there was a crash in a production system. The production system is isolated, and they had defense in depth measures to prevent the key ending up on the corporate system. So that all sounds good, like defense in depth. That sounds like
great. I was great pleasantly surprised that they had that much, you know, kind of forethought, to be honest.
Yeah. But the key part for me is that they said we just followed our standard processes. And so standard processes, I think, are good for standard things. But what we're talking about here is essentially the keys to the kingdom. Like, it's a very, very important key. Do you just follow...
Like, not just one kingdom, this is everybody's kingdoms now that we're all on 365.
Yeah. Do you just follow standard processes for the most important thing in your life? No, I don't think you do. No, and to me, this means that Microsoft didn't really think about what's important, what should we do to protect it. So I spoke to a former colleague of mine, Vaughan Shanks. So he'd done software development at both ASD and also in NSA. And his view was that if you're working on the very most important thing, like, lock that person up, stick them in a basement without internet access.
And that's spook's answer to everything, though, is like, stick them in the basement, don't let them out.
Yeah. And I think one reasonable pushback is that Microsoft is not the US government, right? So there's a,
If they can sign tokens to log into the State Department's email, then maybe they are the US government.
I think exactly. And so, and I think also the, you know, this example, Microsoft has really, really been bitten in the ass by it. And yes. I think they would prefer to have said, oh, that's a very, very important key. Let's do something different for that. Just on the off chance that there's a race condition and, you know, token stealing malware, whatever bizarre chance, let's just eliminate it. So I think that shows that they weren't really thinking about what's important and how do we protect it as well. And so these are all governance problems, I think, and they're cultural governance problems.
I mean, you make the point that this is a cultural issue about how you think about security and how you think about risk and how you manage it in your organization. And that's a thing that, you know, isn't just security people's work. Like, everybody needs to understand why they are working in a basement and why they are doing these things. And, you know, that's not a natural state of affairs for civilians, right? In government and mill, you know, you're kind of, it's beaten into you sometimes, you know, literally, I suppose. Whereas, you know, us civilians, we don't have the same degree of exposure to the risks, to the consequences, or the same kind of big picture thinking. And I wonder if that is even fixable for civilians?
I think it is. And so I think the reason it's fixable is that you can hire someone who's a real pain in the ass security Nazi. And this is like extremely painful. Like, it's
because when us security folk are meant to be all cuddly, touchy feely, friendly, not no-sayers anymore, right?
And I think it starts with someone like Satya Nadella saying, we're going to put someone as the head of this, and we're going to find someone who will absolutely enforce that we think about these decisions. And so I think that is extremely painful. That's why they haven't done it till now. I think that's, you know, a lot of people will hate it, but I think that's kind of how you avoid these problems. You have that kind of thinking.
Do you think the CSRB, the Cyber Safety Review Board, looking into this, do you think that's a thing that could apply enough leverage to make it real for them?
It is always helpful to have a very serious group of people ask you questions about how you prioritize these things. So I'm hopeful that a CSRB investigation will kind of get the message through.
Now, speaking of the government encouraging private entities to do things, we have a case in the UK of the government encouraging the government to do some things. And that, in your mind, seems like a good move.
Yeah, so the story here is that the UK's Information Commissioner's Office and the National Cybersecurity Centre signed an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding. And it struck me as good news because typically that kind of thing just doesn't happen. You don't often. I've never written a story where one government agency has cooperated with another in a kind of in this kind of way. Right. They work together on operations and stuff, you know, all the time, but in this kind of way. And the problem they seem to be trying to solve is that people are afraid of contacting them because they're afraid that they'll get fined by the ICO, the Commissioner's Office. So that's a data privacy and protection type body, and it is the body, it has the power to levy fines if your cybersecurity is terrible. And so the implication of the MOU is that people are not contacting the NCSC because they're afraid that the NCSC, who can do things like incident response and help you with your cybersecurity posture, will rat them out to the ICO. And so the MOU specifically says the NCSC will never pass information to the ICO unless you agree.
It's nice to see. In this case, I guess it's not so much carrot and stick as it's just a little bit of carrot and a little less stick, perhaps.
That's right.
There's some suggestion that They may reduce the fines that they might levy if you have cooperated well, which I don't know if that's carrot or stick. A little bit of both.
The beatings will be slightly smaller if you...
Yes, exactly. That's about all we have time for today. Hopefully next week you'll give Microsoft a break there, Tom.
I'm away next week, but it's been a pleasure, Adam.